early voting has begun in the Nevada primary, but that doesn't mean candidates have stopped campaigning. When KUNR last spoke with Clark County Commissioner and Democratic candidate for governor, Steve Sisolak, he explained that increasing access to health care, expanding economic development, and improving schools were his top priorities. He recently sat down with our political reporter, Paul Boger, to take a dive a little deeper and talk about the issues.
I wanted to ask, you know, what do you see, you know, as somebody running for governor as the most important issues facing Nevada right now?
Well, I don't know if you can narrow it down to just one, but I've got several that we're focusing on, and I'll go through the three of them. The one of the big ones is obviously healthcare. I'm concerned that we've got senior citizens that are still not covered, even though 89% of the people in the state are covered with the expansion of Medicaid. We need to do more. We're short on providers, so the second medical school will certainly help in terms of providers. But we need to add mental health care to the healthcare scenario because mental health care is just as important as any other doctor visit that you might have. So I think we need to expand coverage of those areas and make sure that it's affordable and accessible. Having health care that's neither affordable or accessible isn't having health care. So we want to focus on changing those things. The other two that we're focusing on are education and jobs. I'm a big believer. I spent 10 years on the Nevada System of Higher Education, Board of Regents, and dealing with job issues. And our teachers, if we want to recruit and retain the best teachers, we have to start paying a decent wage, and we're not doing that. We have to invest in education in a way that we haven't done before that gets actually down to the teachers. They have a teacher that's making in the high $30,000s or $40,000 a year, and they have to spend $2,000 of their own money to buy school supplies, and they buy granola bars to bring in for the kids that don't have lunch. That's not a reasonable income. So we need to invest more in our teachers. But the other thing that I'm concerned about, and we need also to reduce class size reduction in the K-12 area. In higher education, I've got a different outlook on things. I spent 10 years, as I said, on the Board of Regents, and one of the difficult things I would have is you work with a student and it takes them now 5 years to get a four-year degree. So spending 5 years, they have $80,000 or $100,000 in student debts. That's just insurmountable, and they end up with a liberal arts degree that can maybe pay them $30,000 a year, and they'll never pay that debt off. So I think we're leading kids down the wrong road. We're kind of overselling and under-delivering. So what I want to focus on is we've got a shortage of trades, whether that trade be the culinary arts, it be a plumber or a pipe fitter or a carpenter, a laborer, or an auto mechanic, a paramedic, whatever that might be. And as the junior and senior years, particularly in high schools, expose themselves to various trades that might be available. I was up here at ACE and I saw kids that were sophomores in high school doing welding and doing actual machine lathing. Metal lathing on machines, which is a tremendous skill. And I can tell you that those students have a job before they graduate from high school. It's a good paying job. Those jobs pay upwards of $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year. They have no student debt, and it's an opportunity that we need to give the kids. And I want to do everything we can to take the stigma away from having a trade as opposed to having a diploma that really doesn't guarantee them a job.
I want to circle back to K-12 education. What do you see as the number one way to improve schools here in Nevada?
Well, there's not just one way. There's a plethora of ways. You know, the first is if you want to have a good education system, I think the backbone of that is first-rate educators. You know, and to have first-rate educators, you need to pay them. We've got a lot of our schools, I bet people don't realize, don't have libraries or librarians even anymore. That's been cut as part of the budget cut. So I want to fix that. I want to have reduced classes. I was with a lady that was teaching, a young woman that was teaching Spanish. She had 42 kids in her class, 42 kids teaching them Spanish, and had to ask for two more desks because she was going there, two more kids came in. So now it's 44 kids. And it ends up being a babysitting as opposed to really an instructional learning scenario for the students.
One of the ideas is paying teachers more, if I understand correctly.
Correct.
That costs money. You're a South Nevada guy, Clark County guy. Do you support the Nevada plan kind of as it is right now, or how do you fix that?
Well, not exactly how it is. I think we need to make some changes to it. What I would like to do, first off, the DSA formula is 50 years old. It's not been adjusted in 50 years. There have to be some changes. Now, we had the commerce tax, and a lot of money was raised. Business stepped forward and supported education. But that money went to specialty schools. It went to Victory Schools, Zoom Schools, ELL, that type of thing. We need to get more dollars in the regular classroom. So what I would propose, and I'd like to get all of the develop a task force, a blue ribbon panel that's made up of the former governors. If you get, you know, Governor Sandoval and Governor Bryan and Governor Miller and the governors that we have to sit down and say, hey, look, let's take this all head on because this is everybody's problem. This isn't my problem. This is a problem as a state. And get some expertise in there. We need to look at the DSA formula, and you can hold schools harmless with what they're getting now, but new revenue that comes in should be directed towards the schools that are underfunded now, currently not getting what I would call their equitable amount of money. Everything is on the table. The only thing that's not on the table is doing nothing. And one of them is we can, I think, generate more money through the formula and get it into the schools.
What about school choice?
I think that issue is going to continue to come up. And the issue I have is I can't support diverting any money currently that's going to public schools. I mean, it's so underfunded as we are right now compared to the national average. And we need to adequately fund public schools before we can get into giving money to private school. I know a lot of parents want that choice to go to a private school, a parochial school, whatever it might be. But I think we need to fund our public schools equitably and sufficiently.
Switching gears, you talked about health care. We've heard a lot over the last few months about efforts to repeal key provisions in Obamacare. How would you secure funding for Medicaid in light of those efforts to repeal?
We cannot leave our most vulnerable population, which is our seniors and our children, without being exposed to not having adequate health care, adequate access and affordability to health care. So the state is going to have to come up with, like some states have set up their own Medicaid system. I don't know if we can get there yet as Nevada, quite frankly. I think we need to work with our congressional delegation to assure that we have money coming forward to make sure that we can fund Medicaid and people can be delivered the care that they need.
You know, as governor, where do you fall on the DACA debate, and you know, how do you use the state, or how can the state protect those individuals?
Here, first off, and I've got a couple of views or a couple anecdotes I'd like to give you on that. I'm supportive of DACA. You know, there's kids that have come and through no fault of their own. I mean, they're here and they become integrated in our society, and they do an absolutely great job. They're definitely contributing members of our society. That being said, I sit on the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department Fiscal Affairs Board, and we deal with this, and I can tell you we have only been reactive. We've never been proactive. We have never gone to doors and knocked on doors and deported folks that we take them into custody. Then again, if somebody commits a violent crime, I'm the first one that's going to stand up and saying, you know, you don't belong here. We don't need you here. We don't want you here. And we do cooperate if somebody's convicted of a conviction of a violent crime and that they need to be deported, because that our money shouldn't be spent on that and our citizens shouldn't have to deal with that. So it's reactive. I think that Nevada, our country, has always been a melting pot. I mean, it's always welcomed everybody, and I think we need to continue to do that.
Would you work to create a sanctuary state law, or do you oppose the current efforts to get a sanctuary state ban on the ballot?
Yeah. Now, how I feel is this is similar to what Governor Sandoval has said. I mean, it's not an issue as far as I'm concerned. I think people that are pushing one way or the other are fear-mongering. They're trying to instill fear into people, and I've seen this at certain activities, you know, where I go and speak to people, and you know, they're afraid, and I don't want them to be afraid to talk to the police department, which is one of the problems that we have when you put this in there, where you have witnesses to crimes that are afraid to come forward and talk because for fear if they're not documented that they could be deported for being a witness to a crime. And that's not fair. And I think that we need to assure people that it's a safe place to live. We can work with our federal delegation. Most of the immigration reform is done on a federal level, clearly, and make sure that we're on the same page moving forward.
Since October 1st, you've been very vocal about your desires to implement the state's background check law. And I'm curious because, you know, the AG has already ruled it unenforceable. So what do you do as governor if you become governor? How do you fix that? How do you address it?
I think Sandy Hook is the initial thing that set my feelings on guns the way they are today. I am not in favor of the situation that we're in right now as it relates to question one, the background check. And I'm confident that we could sit down, if the goal was to find something that would work, sit down with our federal partners and say, hey, look, how can we do these background checks that we can make sure that they get done? Because when you're dealing with people that, for example, have a domestic violence restraining order against them, and they can go on Craigslist and buy a weapon and get it, you know, 10 minutes later when you're paying cash, we're losing lives. And that's something that simply is not tolerable.
A lot of folks have talked about the commerce tax in regards to education and it being important to education. You know, on the other side of the aisle, Republicans say it's job killer. It's the largest tax increase in the state's history. You know, where do you fall in that debate?
Well, that was something that was vetted last session and was passed. I'm not in favor, certainly, of repealing it, because if you repeal it, you got to find some money to fill that hole, and I don't know where anybody plans to fill that hole with. I mean, the legislators and the governor made the decision that that was the best way to go to address the needs at their time. I respect that. I agree that it solved it, and I wouldn't be willing to make any changes to it unless somebody came up with a plan to adequately fund the needs of the state without a commerce tax.
How do you work to attract jobs here to the state and diversify the economy?
I think what we need to do is, and I guess it's a kind of a sports analogy, is you can't hit a home run every time. You know, sometimes you got to try to get a single and drive a runner home, or you got to bunt and beat out a bunt. We can't always be seeking the 2,000, 4,000 job companies. There's nothing the matter with getting a bunch of 50-employee companies that come here, and that 50-employee company is going to grow and maybe become a 500 or 2,000-employee company over a period of time. So I think we need to step back a little bit and not try to just hit it over the fence every single time. Sometimes just, you know, get a single up the middle and get a company that's going to employ 40 or 50 people and encourage them to grow, and we'll be better off.
You have been a major supporter of the stadium down in Las Vegas. You know, why is that, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
And the stadium is, and I'll be candid with the stadium, and we had a very, I think, good special session that the governor called, and he appointed me to the Southern Nevada Tourism Infrastructure Committee that vetted this, and I will venture to say that there's never been a project that was more vetted than that stadium and convention center were vetted. And it was kind of like, you get one, you get the other one. I mean, you can't get one without the other, because some people supported one and some supported the other. The hotel industry, who supported both of them, is saying, look, their main concern is to put heads in beds. They got 160,000 rooms on Las Vegas Boulevard, on the strip, that we have to fill every single night. That's a lot of people to have to bring into town. And they constantly need to reinvent themselves and come up with new attractions and new events and whatnot in order to get people coming here. So we came up with a plan that does not cost the citizens of Nevada one penny. Not one penny. It's all paid for by tourists that come in, and it's an increase in the room tax, which every city has a room tax. And when we go to a city, whether you go to – I was in Chicago a little bit ago, and I paid a room tax, and I have no idea what they spent that money on. Maybe they built a stadium. Maybe they paved the roads. I couldn't tell you what they spent it on, but I paid it as part of my bill. So what we've done, the resort industry wanted both of these things, and they agreed to these two room taxes, room tax increases. Now, the two projects together will provide 32,000 construction jobs. That's not 3,200, it's 32,000 construction jobs. It would fill the T-Mobile Arena twice with the number of people that are going to be working on construction there. It's going to be about 14,000 permanent jobs that are going to be there as a result of that. So those jobs are huge to me. Those jobs are absolutely incredibly important to me because we're putting people to work. Secondly, the stadium is owned by Clark County. No billionaire is getting any subsidy. Clark County owns that stadium. We put up a little more than a third of the price, and they put up two-thirds of the price. They do get to play there. They get to run the stadium. UNLV in Southern Nevada will also play in that stadium. That'll be their new home area. But that stadium is owned and the property of Clark County. The tax revenue, the delta in the tax revenue that is going to be derived as a result of that stadium being there is going to be an increase of approximately $35 to $40 million per year. Now, that is the sales taxes, the LET taxes that are going to be paid on non-football events, the employee tax, commerce tax, all of those taxes that are going to be paid is going to provide the state with an extra $40 million a year, of which at least $13 million plus is going to go into education. So that stadium will provide an additional $13 million to our students every year, and I think that's a good thing.
Steve Sisolak is a Democratic candidate for governor. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.